Copples Western Cape Radio, CWCP.
This is Tony Copples speaking. And by the way, that voice that comes on to introduce the program is that of my son James, who is in Cloudcroft, New Mexico. But the long distances don't stop us cooperating on such matters. Some of you may possibly have tuned into CWCP radio last night at 9 o'clock. Every Wednesday night now at 9 o'clock in South Africa, and that's 2 o'clock in Ottawa, Canada, we are broadcasting archive editions of the program Good News in the Morning. And we started with a couple of programs from 2001, where Alan Churchill gave remarkable examples of apologetics in Christianity. And I invite all listeners to this Thursday night program to tune in next Wednesday night, an hour later than you've tuned in tonight, and listen to that not only next week, but in future. And I promise you, it will be worth your while. Since our arrival in South Africa last November, we have heard claims of five or six communities to be fetal alcohol syndrome capital of the world. My first guest is François Grobelaar, founder of FastFacts. François, would you dare to say which is the true FAS capital of the world?
Tony, thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you today and with your listeners. We really appreciate that we can talk to you about fetal alcohol syndrome and also give you some info on what FastFacts is doing in this field. To be the FAS capital, I don't think that is something that one can be proud of. So to claim it for yourself, I don't think you can be proud of that. I also heard that many towns claim that they are the FAS capital. But what actually is the fact is that a few years ago in the Northern Cape, there was a little town that really had a high percentage of fetal alcohol syndrome, and they were really the FAS capital of the world. But luckily, another NGO, for the Foundation for Alcohol-Related Research, they did the research there, and also they implemented quite a number of prevention programs in those areas. And they had a drop of 30% of the prevalence rate in that area, something really to be proud of, if you want to be proud of. And then some other research organizations, they did a lot of research also in areas very close to Worcester. And in one specific area, they really found a high, high percentage of fetal alcohol syndrome, around about 12.8%. And that is really the highest percentage that I've heard so far. So, yeah, I think it is somewhere in the Western Cape. Yeah.
When did you found FastFacts?
Me and my wife founded FastFacts about May 2002.
And what's her name, by the way?
Her name is Mariki.
And why did you both do this? Because it's a major step. Why did you do it?
Yeah. Tony, me and my wife both grew up on farms. She in the Eastern Cape and myself in Franschhoek. Although I have been born in Alberton, but my mother and father, they brought me down in a little shoebox. So I grew up in Franschhoek on a farm. And there already, when my dad bought the farm, they had what you will also know, the DOP system or the TOT system, where they provided liquor to the laborers. And my father and mother really didn't like that system. They proceeded with that system for a short while, but then they changed it to coffee and tea and cool drink and sandwiches during tea times. But still, we saw what really happened to families who make use of alcohol during pregnancy. And then I also went to an agricultural school in Paul, Hoërlandbouskool Boland, in Afrikaans. And after that, I was called to study theology, actually. And I completed my studies in Stellenbosch at Stellenbosch University. And then after that, we had to do national service, and I was in the Navy as a chaplain. But I never went into a ministry because I thought that I really had a calling to do community work. And I started out with an NGO, the Rural Foundation. They did community work on farms right through South Africa. And my first job actually was in the X River Valley, very close to Worcester. And there were 10 pillars of community work that they implemented. And one of the pillars was actually also social work. And under that pillar, we also pay attention to fetal alcohol syndrome. I can remember that we had a video that we show from the one farm to the other farm, explaining to people what happens when you drink alcohol during pregnancy, what influence that alcohol have on the unborn child. And after the Rural Foundation, I worked for Boskop Training Center. And then during 2000, me and my wife had a ministry amongst computer students here in Worcester. And the owner of the college, he also wanted us to implement programs on alcohol and drug abuse because he believed that if one want to take alcohol and drugs, you must at least make an informed decision. And there we found that some of the ladies really, really became sexually active and they also drank quite a lot. And then me and my wife explained to them what happened when you drink alcohol during pregnancy. And during that time, it is where the Lord called me and my wife and tell me that for the rest of your life, Francois, you will tell people, please don't drink alcohol during pregnancy because it harms the unborn child's brain.
Do you believe that 100 years ago or even longer that this problem was around, maybe if people didn't recognize it, or is it a new thing?
No, definitely not a new thing, but they only for the last few years they recognized it. But I think that fetal alcohol syndrome is as old as alcohol itself.
And do you think that now, if we think right across South Africa, is the problem getting worse, or is it maybe not so bad as it was?
Yeah, Tony, unfortunately, I have to say that I think really that the problem get worse. And the reason for that is that the youth, they start drinking alcohol at very young age, younger and younger, and they don't really have limits in many cases. And we also know, according to statistics, that so many youngsters also get sexually active and they also fall pregnant. So the combination of alcohol and pregnancy, that gives you fetal alcohol syndrome. And then what also happened in broader than South Africa is in Africa, many liquor companies target Africa now, and especially the women in those areas, because they don't drink so much at this stage, but so they see it as a potential market to increase the drinking habits of women in those countries.
Can a child or a young person who has FAS be treated in any way, or is it incurable?
Brain damage, unfortunately, is lifelong. It is permanent. So you can't treat brain damage. Although it is possible that if you find out that a child at a very young age do have fetal alcohol syndrome and you treat him or her with physiotherapy and occupational therapy, there can be a increase in the his or her ability to do things. But the permanent brain damage, that will stay definitely.
So what is the future for somebody who has been unfortunate enough to be born with FAS? What is their likely lifestyle for the rest of their lives?
Yeah. Unfortunately, very limited. And their lifestyle is that they must be with other people that really cares for them. And if they get to the labor market, it must be really protective labor and very limited skills that they need to do that specific jobs. Yeah, unfortunately, they don't have such a bright future as people without fetal alcohol syndrome.
Is there a... I'm sorry, I'm keeping peppering you with questions here, but I'm avid to learn this, and I think our listeners really want to learn it.
It's fine.
Is there an amount of alcohol that somebody could drink while they were pregnant, or should they really stop altogether?
Yeah. The main thing is that there's no amount of safe alcohol that you can drink during pregnancy to be safe. Any amount of alcohol may cause permanent brain damage to a child, may cause fetal alcohol syndrome to a child. But obviously, the more you drink, the more harm you will do to a child. And then our medical industry, I hope that somewhere along the line, the doctors will also tell their patients that they mustn't drink any alcohol during pregnancy, because so many of them are telling their patients that a glass or two a week that is fine. Social drink, that is fine. It is not fine, because you never know when you will harm that unborn child. I know about one case where people did research, and there's one lady, she only one evening went to a party and she drank quite a lot, and her child had all the features of fetal alcohol syndrome.
When you say all the features, is there some way that you can detect or notice somebody with this condition just by looking at them?
Yeah, there are certain features, and then when I say that some of the features, it might be that if a woman don't drink while the ears are formed in womb, then the ears will not be affected. So it depends on whether a mother drink during a certain stage, whether that specific part of the body will be affected.
If a woman who has been a drinker stops drinking just at conception, will that remove the problem, or should she really get off alcohol in advance of conception?
It is always better to stop drinking before conception, a month or two before conception, to clean up the body. So it might be, I'm really not that sure about it, but it might affect the unborn child. But we always tell people that if you plan a pregnancy, stop drinking any alcohol and drugs, if you do take drugs, at least around about 3 months before the time.
You're listening to CWCP Radio. My name's Tony Koppel, and my guest is François Grobelaar, who founded, with his wife, Fast Facts, here in Worcester, Western Cape. And we've been talking about the effects of this terrible scourge. Let's now turn our thoughts towards prevention, because I think that's really what's on your heart, François. Can FAS be prevented, and how do we do that?
Yeah, Tony, FAS can be prevented, surely. It is very simple as well. And the simplicity lies in that a mother must just don't drink any alcohol during her pregnancy. But as we know, that doesn't stop there. The simplicity doesn't stop there. Where it gets complicated is that alcohol is a drug, and they get dependent on alcohol. And it is very difficult for many, many women to abstain from alcohol during pregnancy, although they might know that alcohol may harm their children.
So you may have experience, or through the people who work with you, for someone that you're counseling who knows the consequences of drinking, but she'll still drink anyway. How common is that?
That is quite common. But on the other hand, I must say that in our program, what we call the Pregnant Women Mentoring Program, we do find that most of the women, when you give them the info over and over again, they somewhere along the line decide to stop drinking, at least for the period of pregnancy and breastfeeding, and hopefully for the period afterwards also, so that they can be a good mother also to their unborn child. But you do get women who find it very, very difficult. Then we tell them at least try to drink less and try to eat more healthy if possible.
Let's hear a little bit about your organization here. I don't think it's just you and your wife. Who else do you
Surely
have,
not.
Do you have here in this corporation?
Yeah. If you don't have a team of people, then it's very, very difficult. And even your own team is not enough. you need to take hands also with other organizations to make this a success, because fetal alcohol syndrome influences a whole community, and you need inputs on more than only to tell people that alcohol harms the unborn child. Now, FASFAX, the name stands for Fetal Alcohol Syndrome Facts. That is, we give facts through to communities about fetal alcohol syndrome. So we pay attention to prevention of fetal alcohol syndrome. As soon as a child has been born with fetal alcohol syndrome, you need to provide those families and communities with info like how to grow up a child with fetal alcohol syndrome, how to treat a child in a classroom with fetal alcohol syndrome, how to treat an adult with fetal alcohol syndrome. So that is a different ball game. We have the calling of prevent fetal alcohol syndrome. And that is why our slogan is also that we speak on behalf of the unborn child, those who cannot speak on behalf of themselves. And then we also have a theme right through our programs of I make a difference. I want to make a difference in the life of the unborn child and in the life of the women in the communities, as well as the men in the communities. Now, we have actually, and our vision, Tony, I just want to tell that also for the listeners, is that we have a vision of children being born without fetal alcohol syndrome. Whether in the Western Cape or in the Northern Cape, Africa or Canada or wherever it might be, that is our vision. And then our mission is that we implement programs and campaigns to prevent fetal alcohol syndrome in the different communities. Yeah, we actually have three different programs to prevent fetal alcohol syndrome. What we always say is that knowledge is powerful, and life skills to apply that knowledge is also very, very powerful. It is one thing to have the knowledge of fetal alcohol syndrome. It is another thing to apply that knowledge. So in many cases, you can provide a community with the knowledge, but if you don't provide them with the life skills to apply it, it doesn't mean quite a lot. So our programs really focus on knowledge, but also focus on life skills. One of the first programs that we've got is what we call the Train the Trainer program. What we mean by that is that we identify in certain communities people that are willing to be facilitators in that community, because we believe that we must equip a community to prevent fetal alcohol syndrome themselves. We can't be there all the time. So we train that facilitators, we equip them with all the equipment to take the message to the community, and then we send them out and ask them to spread the news about fetal alcohol syndrome so that you can raise the level of knowledge in the community. That is very important, because how will you stop drinking during pregnancy if you don't know it can harm the unborn child? So you have to raise the knowledge level in a community. And you will be surprised how little knowledge so many communities do have on fetal alcohol syndrome, because many of them believe that this kind of brew and that kind of brew, that is fine. But if there's liquor in your drink, then it can harm the unborn child. The other program that we have is what we call the Pregnant Women Mentoring Program. The focus of this program is on the pregnant women with an alcohol problem. Now, what happens is that in a specific community, we will identify certain women that are willing to be mentors to those pregnant women who do have an alcohol problem. And then we train these mentors and we send them out to go from home to home and to different clinics and identify pregnant women with an alcohol problem and try to convince them to become part of the program. And then they must try to convince them to abstain from alcohol during pregnancy, which is not that easy, and then support them right through the period of pregnancy as well as breastfeeding, because alcohol in the breast milk can also harm the child. So we really try to support them also after, beyond that time, so that they can be good mothers to their newborns. And then a third program which is also a very, very beautiful program, is what we call the BOP program. And that program aim to take the first message to grade 6 and 7 learners in school. Now, BOP is the Afrikaans word for beste opgepaste baba, best care for baby. And that represents the mother that didn't drink alcohol during pregnancy. So the child that she will bring into life, we call that child the name BOP, beste opgepaste baba. But then BOP has a friend, and that friend's name is Billy. And Billy represents the child of a mother that did drink alcohol during pregnancy. And right through the program, the children must decide one day, when I fall pregnant, do I want a BOP baby or do I want a Billy baby? So the daughters, they will pledge and say that one day when I fall pregnant, I will not drink alcohol during pregnancy. And then the boy will say, one day when my partner or my wife falls pregnant, I will support her to abstain from alcohol during pregnancy.
Now, we're in Worcester here, and this is where your office is.
Yes.
Are you sending these wonderful workers out into other towns locally or maybe even wider afield?
Yeah. Most of our programs at this stage we implement in Worcester and surrounding areas, but obviously when we do get funding to implement a program in other areas, we do that. For instance, we got funding a few months ago to implement a program in Kalfinia, train the trainer program, and that went very, very well, so that they can train facilitators from a very wide area in Kalfinia district. And then we also do training. We got some funding from the Stell Foundation to do some training in East London, in Mdansani. We implement there the trainer program as well as the pregnant women mentoring program. So we appointed there a social worker and a community worker, and they are busy training facilitators and mentors in that specific area. So wherever we get funding, there we go. For instance, we also got funding from Department of Agriculture, Western Cape. We trained mentors in the Robertson area, and we will train within the near future mentors also in the Paul area and Lutzville. So wherever we get funding, there we can go.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that you're getting some government funding.
Yeah, Tony, we do. And the government has a huge, huge responsibility to support NGOs like Fast Facts.
Yeah.
Because we are their arms and legs on the ground as well. And they need to give us even more funding to implement programs. Because the more funding they give, the more funding the other donors are willing to give if they see that government is also involved in the programs.
So you also are happy to have fundraising from individuals in the community? How can they help you best?
Yeah, Tony, we always, I think any NGO will tell you that we always need some more and more fundings, because the more funding you do have, the more programs you can implement, the wider your reach can be. So we can really ask individuals that if they do have the capacity to raise funds for Fast Facts, we will appreciate it immensely. And there's different ways to do it. And I think everybody will know by himself or herself what he or she can do in their community to raise funds. And you don't have to do it on your own, because you will not be able to do it on your own. Do get people around you that can support you in raising funds for Fast Facts, like the different churches or clubs or whatever it might be.
Can they actually provide you financial support on your website?
Yeah, if they go to our website, fastfacts.org.za, they will definitely find a link where they can donate funding towards Fast Facts.
What is the Fast Facts footprint?
Yeah, as I said, our footprint is in the Cape Winelands area, very, very strong. And then we did a lot of work in the Northern Cape in the past as well. Not so much work nowadays because of funding, but if we do get funding for the Northern Cape, we will implement some more programs. We got funding now from the Lotto to implement certain programs there. And then, as I said, in East London, in the Eastern Cape, we also started out implement programs in Mdansane.
Are you getting interest from abroad?
Yeah, well, our first funder was actually, or one of our first funders, but abroad was Kinderpostzegels Nederland. And they fund us with quite an amount of funding over a period of 3 years to establish FastFax, and we will be always be thankful towards them for what they did for FastFax. We don't have many other overseas donors, but the donors that we do have in South Africa support us over a longer periods, like the Nelson Mandela Children Trust, and we are very thankful towards them as well, and obviously also Department of Social Development, Western Cape.
Well, one, I know it's a bad thing that South Africa is very high up on the amount of FAS. But on the other hand, if we look at it on a better, another way, you also have a lot of experience now at prevention. And I'm going to predict that you're going to have other countries asking you to come and advise them how to do this sort of work, if it hasn't happened already.
Yeah, as we said, that wherever a child is born, we want that child to be FAS-free. And if it means in other countries as well, then obviously we are willing to do so.
There's an International FAS Day. What's that about? What happens then?
Yeah, Tony, that is always a beautiful occasion. International FAS Day falls on the 9th of the 9th, and the reason, therefore, hopefully all the women will tell you immediately, is because a woman is more or less 9 months pregnant. So what people ask is that around the world, people must ring bells 9 minutes past nine on the 9th of the 9th to tell women abstain from alcohol during pregnancy. And this year, International FAS Day, the 9th of the 9th, falls on a Sunday. And we're really going to try to ask all the different churches to become involved in this project. We will send them certain information where they, in their own community, can become involved in the prevention of fetal alcohol syndrome.
Now, you're the founder. How do you measure the success of your organization?
Yeah, that is very, very important. We had two impact assessment studies in the past, and they found that the areas where we were involved, the knowledge level increased tremendously, and then the people also become more health conscious. And then the third one, which is very, very important, they also found that there's around about 59% behavioral change in a positive way amongst people who received our programs. So we do make a difference. And then the Stell Foundation and the Nelson Mandela Children Fund, they are also helping us to measure the success of our programs.
Is there anything, Francois, that I should have asked you, but I didn't, that you'd love to say?
You asked me so many questions, Tony. I think we covered quite a lot. And what we want to say from our side, from FastFax, to conclude, is that really, if you are a woman, please, please, if you plan to get pregnant, abstain from alcohol immediately. If you are sexually active and doesn't use any contraceptives, then you mustn't drink alcohol because you may fall pregnant. So that is also very important. So not a drop, not a single drop, pregnant woman.
Thank you very much, Francois Grobelaar, for bringing us all this vital information about what I haven't been in South Africa very long, but it seems to me that this is one of the largest challenges this country faces. And there may be not enough people who are realizing that. But we're creating generations of people who are not able to contribute to the community, and basically we're locking them up in places which I don't think anyone would want to be. And that is a very sad thing. We have to deal with this problem in a humanitarian way, and education is clearly the key here.
Yeah, definitely.
So I speak on behalf of the rest of the world. We're grateful to you for the vision you were given and the way in which you're carrying out. And you said that you're going to do this for the rest of your life. So you've got a lot of good work ahead of you, Francois.
Yeah, and Tony, from our side also, thank you for the initiative that you take, for the opportunity you give us to promote our work and to tell other people not to drink alcohol during pregnancy.
I'm L.A. Koppel on CWCP Koppel's Western Cape Radio. Hope you're having a lovely evening. We'll hear a train song from a Canadian friend of mine and an inspirational song from a Durban-based band, but we'll start our set with a song about rain. Australia has seasons of drought, so they can identify with the Western Cape drought here. Here's Barry Davis with Rain on the Tin on CWCP Koppel's Western Cape Radio.
30 years of farming, hanging in the balance. Dreams and expectations, hanging by a thread. Will the morning bring us a fresh new year's beginning, or crush our hopes in barren dust instead? It's New Year's Eve, though it isn't in December. We're waiting for the new year to begin. But it isn't clocks or church bells will tell us when it's starting. It will be the sound of rain upon the tin. Just last month, our dearest, closest friends and neighbors finally lost the battle and moved to Roxby Downs. 'Cause it really doesn't matter if it rains or if it doesn't, when you're working nearly 2 Ks underground. And I watch my wife sitting, hands wrapped around her coffee, eyes drained of emotion by the battle to survive. And I read her thoughts so well. She is thinking of the future and the odds of finding work at 55. It's New Year's Eve, though it isn't in December. We're waiting for the new year to begin. But it isn't clocks or church bells will tell us when it's starting. It will be the sound of rain upon the tin. Then a single drop so sudden, perhaps I was mistaken. Then a gentle pattering, and then a mighty roar. For a second, there's no movement, and then my chair falls backwards as I grab her hand and pull her to the door. And we stand like streaming statues, our faces turned to heaven. Still not quite believing that the new year can begin. And I see her lips are moving, but I can't hear what she's saying, for the drumming of the rain upon the tin. It's New Year's Eve, though it isn't in December. We're waiting for the new year to begin. But it isn't clocks or church bells will tell us when it's starting. It will be the sound of rain on the tin. But even as we stand there, our arms around each other, dancing to the blissful sound of teeming, soaking rain, I know deep in my heart the battle isn't over. And next year we'll be waiting once again for New Year's Eve. Though it won't be in December, we'll be waiting for the new year to begin. But it won't be clocks or church bells will tell us when it's starting. It will be the sound of rain, pouring, teeming rain. It will be the sound of rain upon the tin.
It's time for the train. Climb aboard on CWCV, Couples Western Cape Radio.
There's a man who rides the train a lot.
Riding on the railway.
Hard time town to trouble spot.
Riding on the railway.
You can hear him mumble, praise the Lord.
Riding on the railway.
When the porter hollers, all aboard.
Riding on the railway.
He's down and out in his rotten luck, but he tips that porter 20 bucks. I'm at the end of my tattered rope. You can wake me up when we get to Hope. Hoo-hoo, the whistle blows, all aboard, it's time to go. Roll, roll, the wheels go round, riding on the railway. There's a girl who got the urge to roam,
riding on the railway.
Far from her unhappy home,
riding on the railway.
Pretty as a day in spring,
riding on the railway.
Big brown eyes and everything,
riding on the railway.
Staring out the window pane, sunsets over fields of grain, searching for the rising moon, shining down on Saskatoon.
Boo-hoo, the whistle blows, all aboard, it's time to go. Roll, roll, the wheels go round, riding on the railway.
Students headed for the woods,
riding on the railway.
To a planting camp where the money's good,
riding on the railway.
Trading in the city life,
riding on the railway.
For a summer's worth of bugs and strife,
riding on the railway.
Study books all left behind, light of load and free of mind. Planting spades in old backpacks, horn pane bound by the railway tracks.
Ooh-hoo, the whistle blows, all aboard, it's time to go. Roll, roll, the wheels go round, riding on the railway.
There's a lady in her golden age,
riding on the railway.
Said the old folks' home is a gilded cage,
riding on the railway.
And it's been 60 years or more,
riding on the railway.
Since I last saw the western shore,
riding on the railway.
All those years have come and gone, and still the train keeps rolling on. Off for western shores again, Vancouver bound upon the train.
Ooh-hoo, the whistle blows, all aboard, it's time to go. Roll, roll, the wheels go round, riding on the railway.
Eastbound for the Maritimes,
riding on the railway.
Westbound for the fairer climes,
riding on the railway.
Northbound for the skies so bright,
riding on the railway.
Southbound for the city lights,
riding on the railway.
Summer or winter, spring and fall, railway rolls right through it all. Lifeblood of a nation's pride across this country far and wide.
Ooh-hoo, the whistle blows, all aboard, it's time to go. Roll, roll, the wheels go round, riding on the railway.
Raise a glass for the engineer,
riding on the railway.
And all the railway riders here,
riding on the railway.
countryside we gaze upon.
Riding on the railway.
And the silver rails we're riding on.
Riding on the railway.
Raise your glass again and say a toast to the crew aboard today. One for every old rail hand and the mighty trains of this mighty land.
Boo-hoo, the whistle blows, all aboard, it's time to go. Roll, roll, the wheels go round, riding on the railway. Boo-hoo, the whistle blows, all aboard, it's time to go. Roll, roll, the wheels go round, riding on the railway. Boo-hoo, the whistle blows, all aboard, it's time to go. Roll, roll, the wheels go round, riding on the railway. Riding on the railway, riding on the railway.
The signal, it will be 3:16:3 exactly.
CP, Koppel's Western Cape Radio. I'm L.A. Koppel. We just heard The Glorious Ones by Tree 63, a Christian band from Durban. Sadly, they aren't together anymore, but leader John Ellis is still around. We also heard David Newlands with Riding the Railway. He's a Canadian folky and adventurer. He feels the same way about train songs that I do, and I often would have him on the show in CKCU talking and singing about trains. One year he was invited to travel the train across Canada with other musicians, and this song was a part of that tour. This is a rather rare recording. And we started the set with English-Australian Barry Davis with Rain on the Tin. I got to know Barry at a few Canadian folk festival conferences years ago. Sadly, he's not recording now due to his health, but you may have an opportunity to listen to more of his songs. So please check him out, Barry Davis. He and his wife Rosalind live in Adelaide, South Australia.
Copples Western Cape Radio, CWCP.
Worcester Christian Church is conducting a number of ministries in Avian Park, and I'd just like you to know about one of them. It's called the Swap Shop, and one of the volunteers that's down there, I think it's once a week. Is it once a week, Tembai?
Twice a month, once every 2 weeks.
Okay. One of the volunteers is Tendai Ngoma, and he's with me now. And he told me earlier this story of what goes on at Swap Shop, and I thought it was fascinating. So I'm going to ask him to tell you about it. So tell us what the idea is, and then what you do.
All right. Thank you, Tony. Well, the Swap Shop is an idea to encourage the community of Avian Park, that's the women and the children, first, to be environmentally conscious about their surroundings. But it also helps to foster a spirit of self-dependent, whereby the women and the children can collect some rubbish around their community. They sort it into four groups, that is plastic, metal, paper, and glass. And when they do that, they bring that to the swap shop. And at the swap shop, that gets weighed converted into, the weight is converted into buying purchasing power, that they can go into the shop and get some items. So by so doing, the children are encouraged to do some work and be able to earn, same with the women. Now, what do I do? What is my role in this project? I volunteered to help with the project, starting from receiving the people when they come with the material, so I can inspect it, because sometimes you get people mixing up their plastic maybe with rocks and bottles, or you might have some of the sneaky little children trying to get away with making their material heavier by putting some foreign materials. So I do the inspection, I take that to the scale, I weigh that, I record how much their metal weighs, their plastic weighs, and I give them a ticket. And that ticket is what they, depending on what weight they have brought, is what they now take into the shop and they can buy. For the children, they can buy toys, pencils, books, sweets and biscuits. Now for the mature women, for their mothers, they are able to buy grocery items, maybe cooking oil, some sugar. And they can even buy some clothing items, shoes, sandals. So, yeah, I would say for my part, and also just to encourage the children, because sometimes you find the little children, they're a bit scared to come to the scale, or the big boys are pushing them around. So my role and my duty is also to instill some sense of order and to teach a bit of discipline on the bigger boys, and also to encourage, because some of them, they get discouraged when they don't, when maybe their ticket or the material that they have brought is not able to buy what they would have wanted. You want to encourage them that next time they should just collect a little bit more, and then they'll be able to buy a little bit more as well.
Tendai, how many children are we talking about here who come out?
Tony, so far with the children, I haven't been able to get the exact statistics, but I would definitely say it is upwards of 75. There are a lot of children who came. But with the women, I can confirm that with the last exercise that we had 47 women that came through.
Are the women also collecting recyclables, or are they just watching over the children?
The women collect as well. So actually, Swap Shop is, you have two sessions. You have a morning sessions where the children bring their collectibles, their stuff. And in the afternoon, you have the mothers coming with their stuff. So the women have got their own, the children have got their own.
So this is a win-win-win situation. The children are learning
about not leaving garbage lying around.
Yes.
They're discovering a certain amount about what recycling is and the values that these materials still have.
Definitely.
And they're earning a little money.
Sure.
not necessarily real money, but something that they can turn into do things they need.
Yes, definitely, yeah. Tony. I mean, I've actually begun to see that the children realize that if they don't bring anything, they're not going to get anything from the shop.
So we're teaching them economics apart from anything else. And I imagine they have a lot of fun while they're doing it.
Definitely, they do have fun from what I have seen. Because even when they're doing their shopping, you can see they go on the shelves and they're looking around for what they want, and then they really feel proud about the effort. And then after that, by the way, there's a children's ministry place outside where there's music playing and where the children can sit and they can also listen to the word of God and they can play and just sing some hymns. So it's not just about that. After that, they get to listen to the word. They get to get people to shepherd them and just guide them on the word as well. Because I think at the end of the day, it's also bringing the children to the Lord. And also the mothers, there's also tea. After they have sold and bought whatever they want, they come to have tea, chat with one or two of the volunteers if they've got some problems or some counseling or anything that they want.
How did you come to get involved in this?
It was actually by coincidence. I was having a chat with the program, organizer, Pam. I had a chat with her one day about my passion for recycling, and I was just talking to her that I enjoy doing some recycling work, and then I think somewhere she put it together, and one of the days she just invited me and asked me if I wanted to volunteer. And when I got there, I couldn't believe that recycling could actually be not just a commercial venture, but it could also be where you're actually grooming children, women, and you know, helping a community. Because I believe this project is actually in a very indirect way teaching this community to be self-reliant and to be in control of their earnings,
of resources, as well. Yes. Yeah. Is your passion for recycling connected in any way with the fact that you are trained as a metallurgist?
Yes, definitely. Tony, your questions, it's very interesting how you managed to pick that up. Because my background as a metallurgist is about resources from the ground, digging resources from the ground. In this case, we're talking about metals. And these are finite resources, you know, and recycling is a way of preserving and not depleting, and as well as depleting our resources, as well as minimizing pollution. And when you now get people recycling as they do, we're actually making use of resources that we've already dug up from the ground, and we process them in ways that are less polluting. And
I'm very happy to have learned about this from you, Tunde, tonight, and I wish you great success in future swap shops. And maybe you'll find a large diamond one of these, something like that.
Tony, I always have my eyes peeled for that one, and the day I come across one, you'll definitely be the first one to know about it.
You know that they found a huge diamond in Lesotho recently.
No.
I think it was amongst the largest diamonds that's ever been found in Lesotho. Yes.
Wow.
And on that note, I'm going to thank my guest, Tunde. Thank you for coming into the studio.
Thank you, Tony.
Tony and I are Canadian missionaries in South Africa. We have learned through our African friends in different countries how to slow down and be relational. This is something all of us in fast-paced countries need to learn. So come along with me, and we'll learn together on the adventures of growing in God. Growing through relationships, communion of saints.
My name is Laurie Ann, and I'm a missionary. During my mission travels, I've ministered with people in Northern Ireland, Pakistan, Canada, and the USA. I've also ministered in African countries like Kenya, Ghana, Sierra Leone, Mozambique, South Africa, and Botswana. But at this time, we live in the beautiful Western Cape of South Africa. We've been on a journey together where we've learned we grow best when we allow God's grace to work in our lives without obstacles slowing us down. These obstacles can be like speed bumps on a road that are way too high. We have seen some of those road bumps in Pemba, Mozambique. They were so high that they caused damage to smaller cars. And in some cases, people even drove into the gutters to avoid them. We need to allow God to take away these obstacles in our lives so that we can stay on the road and not go into the gutter. These include restlessness, unforgiveness, and bitterness. These speed bumps also harm our relationships with other people. Have you ever spent time with someone who has a hard, bitter heart? Their heart is like a stone and you can't feel anything from them but anger. You certainly can't tell how they feel about you. But at best, we are created to be in relationship. We bless each other. We grow best through being blessed, encouraged, and loved by others. And even more so when we share that love with others. We grow in giving to our relationships. Some people call Christian friendships fellowship. But what exactly does fellowship mean? It is much more than small talk and asking a polite how are you when you have a coffee after a church service. In South Africa, I've discovered the local Xhosa people greet you and ask you how you are. They expect you to ask them how they are before you continue the conversation. They stress relationship and open the way to something more. Fellowship is time spent in caring friendship and journeying in your faith with each other. It includes sharing your daily struggles and encouraging each other in love and prayer. The Bible has many examples of how we minister to each other. The phrase one another is repeated in the New Testament many times. Klein Snodgrass shares that we cannot be mature Christians by ourselves, for we cannot give ourselves everything we need for a life of faith. Christ has chosen to grace others so they can contribute to us and us to them. Grace comes from God, but is conveyed through horizontal channels. My Anglican priest, Father John Bridges, says many times that his faith is not entirely his own. He is validated in his faith partly by us, the community who loves Jesus with him. One of my former pastors, Dale, has had a lot of practical sayings about church. Dale shared his hopes and dreams for our congregation in a way that I'll always remember. He said that a church is meant to be a prayer army, a family, and a hospital. The church's triple role was also confirmed to me in a seminary counseling class. I learned there that the church is seen as ecclesia, a place to worship, therapia, a place of healing, and koinonia, the communion of saints. When we greet each other during Sunday services with the peace of the Lord, we aren't just giving hugs and handshakes, although I love these. I love these a lot. We are actually extending love to each other in the Lord's name. Each time we do this, I feel incredibly blessed. We do this because we have just been forgiven by God for whatever sins we've just given to him. This is also a time to extend the same love and forgiveness to each other, even if it's just for a minute. This represents worship, healing, and family all at the same time. Perhaps a good way to understand Christian fellowship is to think on the term communion of saints. This is a term I've come to love. One of the schools I studied at was University of Toronto. I took religious studies and sociology, but I also learned about Celtic culture, Islamic culture, classical philosophy, and so much more. When I was in my first year, I took the course Basic Christian Beliefs at St. Michael's College. I was fascinated by New Testament word studies. Since the New Testament was written in Greek, we took a look at specific words and found that they were deeply profound. I studied parousia, the return of Jesus, then metanoia, which means changing your mind or attitude. But my favorite was koinonia, which means communion of saints or fellowship. This is also my favorite aspect of church as well. Communion of saints is so important that it's mentioned as a line in both the Nicene and Apostles' Creeds. If you're in a liturgical church, you would read this out every Sunday. Koinonia is a special bond between Christians that is more than friendship and deeper than family ties. It is the sense of deep connection that you have with someone with whom you've just shared and prayed. The Holy Spirit fills both you and your prayer partner while you are praying together. During this time, He knits your spirits and hearts together in a deep way. Since this is such a deep connection, it's best if your regular prayer partner is someone of the same gender, although it's also great to pray with your spouse. This doesn't mean that you can't pray with someone of the opposite sex, just that it's easier for you to be of the same gender due to the strength of the bond. This closeness also happens often during ministry time and healing prayer in Sunday services. It's an intimate time that is best shared with a team of two, as well as the person being prayed for. This is a safe place to be since the bond is strengthened by friendship and inspired by compassion. It's this relational aspect of church that makes the congregation a hospital and a place of healing, because healing happens within relationships. Of course, we should all know there is no such thing as a perfect church. Everyone who is in a congregation is at different stages of spiritual growth and emotional maturity. However, at wonderful times, we do see glimpses of how church should be. I have seen God work through relationships in the Alpha Course Holy Spirit Weekend, women's retreats, and special prayer meetings. We've had a church connection with friends while praying over coffee and cake or dinner. We've had this connection in connect groups in one church and cell groups in another. Back in Canada, I've had this with my best friend while we share and pray over weekly concerns and spend time in soaking prayer. In the past, I've loved getting to know the guests in our Alpha courses, whether they're an inmate for Prison Alpha, a guest on Pub Alpha, a co-cook on Community Alpha, or in a discussion group in another Alpha. Through the Alpha course, I have gained really amazing friends. One gentle participant said that he was able to share deep things with us that he could never have shared with any of his longtime secular friends. This trust isn't because Alpha is a secret society. It's definitely not that. The caring and sharing relationship gains intimate trust in each other. We grow through the small group relationship. Years ago, a lady named May was part of one of our Alpha courses. She loved the course, but she didn't like going to church except for the occasional evening service. She didn't have any fire in her faith due to her isolation, although she appreciated our company. I wondered how she could even survive in her faith completely on her own. We aren't created to be in isolation. Nikki Gumbel shares a story of a young man who used to have a very fiery faith that was contagious. However, after he decided to not go to church anymore, he lost his enthusiasm. So he went to visit a wise older man to ask him why he had lost his joy. The man didn't say a word, but instead spoke to the young man through action. They lived in the UK where it gets cold and damp in the winter, so the old man had a coal fireplace. All the coals in the fireplace were hot and glowing red. The man reached into the fireplace with a pair of metal tongs, took a coal, and set it down on the hearth. At first, the coal was red, but it soon faded and became gray and black. Then the older man looked at the young man and placed the faded coal back into the fire. It soon became red hot again. So you can see, the man showed his friend how and why he lost his enthusiasm without speaking one single word. The author of the book of Hebrews encourages us to let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. And let us not neglect our meeting together as some people do, but encourage one another, especially now that the day of his return is drawing near. The Apostle Paul encourages us in 1 Corinthians 12 that we are a body. The creeds encourage us that we believe in the communion of saints. We need each other, because Christian relationships are essential to our growing faith. I especially am grateful for the prayers, love, and support of my Christian friends during radio broadcasting school and when I was working in the radio industry. I was the only Christian there, so my Christian family in different denominations became very close. I have come to value the communion of saints no matter what tribe my family is from. Alpha, Iris, our various church families, and so many other friends in Christ. We are family. We have something special in God and each other. And so I bless you with a special blessing. May you see the face of Jesus in those you meet. May you know his love in the friendships you have. May he lead you to divine appointments to give and to receive. May you be filled with the love of Christ as you reach out to each other with overflowing compassion from him. And may the Lord keep you until we connect again. Be blessed, my friends, and tune in again for Ways to Grow in God on Copples Western Cape Radio.
Lord, take this song and fill it with your presence. Let it bring a word of hope to weary, careful hearts. Take this song and fill it, Lord. Fill it with yourself. Lord, take my life and fill it with your praises. Let me speak a word of peace that Jesus brings in me. Take this life and
And Ways to Grow in God this week ended with the Northumbrian Community Choir singing Haven Song from Blessings and Journeys, a very favorite and very rare CD that Laurianne and I bought in Lindisfarne, Holy Island. We thank you for listening to Copples Western Cape Radio on Thursday. We hope that next week you'll tune in both on Wednesday and Thursday. Wednesday at 9 o'clock South African time and Thursday at 8 o'clock South African time. Deduct 7 hours for Ottawa time. We hope you've enjoyed everything that you've heard tonight, and we'd love to hear from you. If you go on to the webpage of the station, which you can find on copplesWesternCape.ca, there's a place where you can leave comments. Please do. It encourages us enormously. Or just send us an email or text. Love to everybody, and bye till next week.